You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, and welcome to The Weekend. And joining us today are Dr. Charmaine Martin and Justin Hartmann and Tracy Leonard. Dr. Martin is a director of medical student education at Texas Tech University Health Center of El Paso. She is also the director of the Primary Care Innovation Grant, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But first of all, welcome to our show, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Now, Dr. Martin, I mentioned that you are the director of this grant that's going to help El Paso Migrant Farm Workers clinics. And so tell us a little bit about how this grant works and how you all were selected.
Sure. This grant is sponsored by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. And the board is actually looking to increase the number of primary care physicians in El Paso.
And so as far as being selected, are you one of a few or the only one in the country?
No, this was a statewide grant, and there were several other institutions that were able to receive an award to increase the number of primary care physicians, not only in El Paso, but across the state of Texas.
And so were they looking at universities that had connections to farming areas and migrant workers?
No, the way that we got connected with the Migrant Farm Workers Clinic is in setting up the grant, we wanted to take students who were interested in primary care. We wanted to help develop some leadership skills, expose them to some intense mentoring, and also from day one, expose them to a population where they could actually practice their clinical skills that they're learning in school.
As I mentioned, joining us also is Tracy Leonard, and Tracy is working closely with Dr. Martin in setting up the curriculum and assigning students to some of these various programs. Tracy, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us as far as some of the things that you were telling me before the program started, as far as how the grant is working, how you assign students, how do you select students, how does this work?
Sure. We're about to start the second year of the program, the grant. So when I started in, we already had our first years. We started out with 20 students. With the second portion of the grant, we selected 10 new first-year medical students. So we were looking for students that were interested in either family medicine, pediatric medicine, or general internal medicine. So it was very tough. We had a great group of people apply this year, so it was a tough selection process. But part of the curriculum that we immerse the students in is really just full-on exposure to the different aspects of primary care. So they really have a good knowledge base in choosing their specialty focus. So hopefully that they stay with family medicine or peds or internal medicine. And then again, the community connection here in El Paso or in Texas in general to try and keep them in this area.
Joining us also is Justin Hartmann. And Justin is a second year medical student, and he is one of the students who's been selected to be part of this grant. Justin, tell us a little bit about, first of all, why you applied for this program, and so far, what have you learned from it?
Sure. So, you know, when I was applying to medical schools across the country, quite a few of them offer primary care tracks. It's becoming kind of more of a thing to address the physician shortage by finding out that, you know, we've got plenty of specialists. That's not, doesn't seem the problem. The problem seems to be that we don't have enough primary care physicians. So, Texas Tech at El Paso has taken kind of unique approach by saying, we're not going to, you know, force you into a certain tract and say you have to be primary care. We're going to just give you more exposure to all of the various things in the field and let you choose for yourself. And it's been a nice experience to see how kind of diverse and, you know, far-ranging the possibilities are within primary care. They really get to do everything. And for me, when I think about being a doctor, I think about, you know, the doctor you go to as a kid when you get a cold, the, you know, the one you call up when, you know, your child's sick, that partner throughout your family's life. And that is the primary care physician, whether that be family medicine, OB-GYN, internal medicine, pediatrics, you know, they cover you for your health.
And as far as the curriculum and dealing with some of the people in the community, how has that affected you and what have you learned?
The El Paso community is it's a rich area, a rich community for the medical student. When I was applying to schools, I was living in Boston while my wife was doing her master's program. And Boston obviously has Harvard Medical School, and then it has some state medical schools, and so a wide range of opportunities. And when I spoke with medical students there, the difference seemed to be, all right, you can go to this expensive private medical school, and you'll see patients shipped in from all across the world with really strange diseases, things that you don't normally get to see. Or you go to the state school, and you get people who, you know, come on off the street. They're going to the county hospitals. They're the uninsured. They've got, you know, common diseases. But they've, you know, nothing – it's not that one is better than the other. It's that you tend to see different diseases through each route. Here in El Paso, that's not true at all. We see everything. You know, we may be a state-run medical school – but and we do get those people who come in with, you know, very serious diabetes and metabolic syndrome. But then because we're in El Paso and we're, you know, kind of the healthcare center for the region, we see all the different types of strange diseases. You know, the times that I've been in the hospital so far, I've seen tuberculosis. I've seen, you know, a very rare type of liver disease called hemochromatosis, you know, things that you really wouldn't get to see in a normal medical school. So it's a very rich area in terms of experience for the medical student.
And would you say, because as you were talking to us before the interview started, that you are from Chicago originally, and people who may be familiar with Chicago may or may not be familiar with Cook County Medical Hospital. And, of course, that was a hospital that went through so much renovation, and there were some very dedicated medical students and doctors who worked to treat those patients. But there was a lot of frustration because they had very few people and very few things to treat the people with, yet they wanted to. And so I'm sure that you're seeing that as you're working here, the fact that there are people, as you mentioned, who have needs, but they may not have the money to travel to Boston or MD Anderson or anywhere else that they may need to go.
Absolutely. Resources to treat that population is one of the most difficult things about being a doctor, you know. Well, a medical student. I'm not a doctor yet. But as we start to learn what the optimal treatment is, then we find our first patient with that disease and say, oh, I know what to do. We can't, right? That treatment's not available to that person. And that is a heartbreaking thing to see and a very frustrating thing from the medical student's point of view. But it's also a very it's a great learning experience. So to know that we have this treatment, but we can't use it, okay, what are the other options, right? What can we do? And you can always do something. Well, 99% of the time you can do something, whether that's, you know, coaching them on lifestyle changes, if that will help, whether that's saying, okay, this medicine is too expensive, but maybe we can use this one, whether that's saying, well, we came into this actually just last week at the Farmworkers Clinic. The 30-day supply is too expensive, but if we do the 15-day supply and have you take twice as much, then, you know, you'll be good. And so trying to find those loopholes is difficult, but it's also going to eventually turn us into better doctors.
We are visiting with Dr. Charmaine Martin, who is the Director of Medical Student Education at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center of El Paso, and Justin Martin, a second-year medical student, and Tracy Leonard, who is an organizer and curriculum founder of the grant that they received, Primary Care Innovation Grant. It's an almost $352,000 grant that is going to help provide medical students with opportunity to care for many underserved populations here in the El Paso region. Dr. Martin, tell us a little bit about, you know, what Justin was talking about, his experience. And it seems to me that being here in the El Paso region, it's rich in, it's almost like a laboratory where people can just learn, especially medical students, because they're seeing for themselves what can't be found in a book.
Exactly. El Paso definitely is a very unique area, and it's an area that has a lot of need. Carlos and Alicia Marentes, they are the directors of the Sin Fronteras, the Migrant Farm Workers Clinic, and we absolutely thank them for letting us in to not only learn, but to try to help as much as we can. The medical students, I'm sure you know about the RotaCare Clinic, the medical student-run clinic. The Migrant Farm Workers Clinic, that is a unique population by the fact that they are always moving. They have to go where the work is. And so being able to assist them and help in any way we can is very important. We have partnerships. We partner with UTEP, the social work department, with other social workers, where I'm trying to, you know, inform myself and the students about resources here in El Paso, because El Paso is a very giving city. Lots of people are willing to help, and it's just a matter of fact of reaching out and seeing how we can come together to help this unique population. And the medical students have, you know, they're primed for that. They come in wanting to help. That's why they want to be here in medical school. And so hopefully this taps more into that. And as Justin said, it can be frustrating sometimes because we do see things and we're like, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? And, you know, if we have to refer someone to the emergency room, sometimes our social worker can help us to assist the patient in getting insurance so that they can access that health care. So it's kind of a microcosm of, you know, what it is out in the real world and learning about some of the frustrations that health providers have.
In dealing with Carlos Marentes many years ago when I was still working in television news, he has always been very involved with farm workers and a big advocate for them. And my feeling of working with some of these farm workers and dealing with them and interviewing them when I did stories about them, a lot of them, as you mentioned, they go where the work is. They travel, but they just not just dad and mom, it's the whole family. And sometimes dad or mom will not go to the doctor if they need to because they know that they need to keep on working or because they prefer that the child go instead of them. How does this affect you all working with them and reaching out to them and saying, look, we're here to help. Things have changed.
Well, one thing is, you know, having regular business hours, if you will, that doesn't work because they're out working. And so when we start, we start at 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. Sometimes we've gone later until 10, and I'm asking the students, close to midnight once, but I, you know, ask the students, okay, I know you all have to study because they still have a whole nother life and a list of things that they have to do. So we have our clinic after hours when they're available. They're at the Migrant Farm Workers Clinic, you know, our center, so that we're available to them.
As far as medical students and available doctors for them, how many do you have available working in this grant? I think Tracy had mentioned 10 earlier.
Mm-hmm. We have mentors who, Dr. Oscar Noriega, he's been going out to the clinic for quite a long time. Dr. Mary Spalding goes as well. And then we are partnering with the Department of Internal Medicine, Dr. Laura Cashin. She is our main contact and actually on the grant for Department of Internal Medicine. And Dr. Lynn Hernan is in the pediatric department. We wanted to include the Department of OBGYN and psychiatry, but because it was a pilot grant, we had to contain it, but we're trying to branch out a little bit more.
Tracy, is as far as you being the coordinator of this grant and you working with students like Justin, tell us a little bit about the mentoring process, because Justin, does he work with them throughout his 4 years at the medical school, or does he then mentor younger students who are coming in? How does this work?
Absolutely. So in the beginning of the grant, we had we have 15 students in the initial group, and they had faculty mentors from the university. in their area of interest that kind of helped connect with them and was there to give them guidance in medical school, but also any questions or concerns they have about the field in general. With this new implantation, the new grant, we've inducted another 10, so we have 25 students total. And now that we have two different medical student groups, we're still keeping the faculty mentors and really trying to build up that relationship. But now, like Justin and the rest of the MS2s, they've taken one of the new first-year medical students under their wing to kind of help be a peer mentor as well. So as the grant in the program continues, we're hoping, you know, Justin and his group of initial students, we can stay with them for the 4 years that they're in medical school and just kind of topple on each other to keep that mentorship going with the students, build the clinic and the relationships there, and then also keep that faculty mentorship in progress as well.
Justin, as Dr. Martin mentioned, El Paso is a very giving city, and, you know, they quickly embrace you if you're from another city or from another country. And it's a lot of, you know, family-type atmospheres. What you mentioned earlier about, you know, wanting to be the doctor who grows up with a family and they get to know you and then their kids go see you, etc. Tell us about the importance of bedside manner in dealing with people who may be kind of ashamed sometimes to go to the doctor because, you know, sometimes a doctor can come across as being high and mighty and, you know, you're just here because you need me, etc.
That high and mighty attitude is something that has never been allowed at the Paula Fauscher School of Medicine from day one. That was not beaten out of us, but that was highly discouraged if anyone ever saw it. I've never seen a administration, a group of teachers or mentors so keyed in on making sure that that their medical students were treating patients with the appropriate amount of respect and comfort. My interview at this medical school started out with the dean of admissions saying that we want to create competent and compassionate physicians. And the competent part was kind of a given. You're going to have to pass the classes. You're going to have to take the exams. You're going to be required to do this. The compassionate was the focus, and it has been since day one and every single day since. There hasn't been a break in that focus. And that is especially true with the work with the migrant farm workers. And you talk about a population who hasn't been to the doctor before, has kind of a low health literacy. They just don't have the experience with the healthcare system to understand a lot of the things that we're doing, a lot of the questions that we ask. So we do have to make sure that we're asking things in a very comforting and open manner. There's no reason to be ashamed of anything that you tell your doctor. They're not there to judge, and we certainly try and promote that that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits we have is being in the migrant farm worker shelter. You know, we come to them, you know, in every way, in terms of location, in terms of knowledge about the healthcare system, in terms of knowledge about their own health. We come to them, speak at the level that they're comfortable with, and do our best to do it in their language. A lot of us are not native Spanish speakers, but we're learning and we do our best.
Because you're a second year medical student, have you come to know some of these families and patients already?
Yeah, absolutely. As Dr. Martin said, the migrant farm worker population is somewhat transient. We do have quite a few repeat patients and those we've come to know. The medical school also does a decent job with that in having us go out to clinics in the community and follow patients throughout the first 2 years of medical school before we get to our clinical years.
And as Tracy mentioned, this program also may help in a way for you all to choose your specialization, whatever direction you want to go. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely. The real kind of frustrating part about being a medical student is that you think, oh, I want to go into medicine, and you don't realize how broad that is. You know, even within primary care, it's an incredibly broad field. So the more experience that one can get in the specifics of, well, what is my day-to-day life going to be as a internist? What is my day-to-day life going to be like as a pediatrician or as someone in family medicine? To understand that at a deeper level is the most useful thing for determining what you want to go into.
Dr. Martin, tell us a little bit about your experience in dealing with the medical students and kind of basing on your experience in medical school and how things have or have not changed.
Things have changed. They've changed. Paul L. Foster, this medical school has a very unique curriculum. And I was here when the Lubbock students were here, and we were a regional campus. And so when the Paul Foster students came in, and we had our four-year medical school program, things have certainly changed a lot. But, you know, medical students, they're really a unique population. They're wonderful. You know, people may say different things about millennials, but every last one of these students who come in the program, some of them are not in the program, but they really are here wanting to make a difference and to help. One clinic I forgot to mention was the Baptist Clinic, and I remember volunteering there sometimes, and then our students come in and all these other clinics just take off. But they're always willing. They're always willing to help and willing to give, whether it's teaching students at elementary schools, holding health fairs, or just a number of different, things that they do, working with Center Against Family and Sexual Violence and children's homes and things like that. They're just a very giving bunch. This is an addition to their curriculum is tough. I mean, it requires knowledge, dedication, a lot of hard work. And so kudos to them for really giving when they could be using that time to study. You know, they are out in the community giving back.
What are some of the challenges that you as a professor at a medical school, director of a program at a medical school, see as far as some of the changes in our government when it comes to insurance, comes to prescription medication, dealing with certain pre-existing conditions, and some of those things. In some instances, I've heard in the past that some of the pharmaceutical companies or insurance companies are trying to tell you all how you should treat the patients because they're looking at numbers instead of the individual, as you mentioned.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's kind of a very hot topic right now. It can be tough, but I think working in an environment, you know, like the Migrant Farm Workers Clinic, kind of gives you, you learn ways, as, you know, Justin said, of not breaking rules, but how to get around things and how there are other ways to help people, whether it's with prescriptions, you know, the whole EpiPen fiasco, you know, there are ways to get around that as well. You know, if patients were having trouble purchasing that. But, you know, it really is, it's kind of a scary time. And if anything, I would just urge everyone to be sure to get out there and vote.
And what about when you're talking about, getting yourself informed? That's one of the things also that some patients are doing as well, because it used to be that, you know, doctors would prescribe a certain medication, but now people at home are bombarded with commercials about certain medications and ask your doctor about this. And so sometimes that person will come in and asking the doctor about that certain prescription or certain medication, whereas before it wasn't like that.
Sure, and that's fair. But, you know, some physicians are of the mindset, you know, just because it's the newest and latest drug, you know, you don't necessarily want to be the first one on board or the last one on board, especially concerning medications because of the side effects. And so that is a discussion that the patient can have with their physician to see what actually would work better for them.
And what about, I think you all have a class that addresses this, and that is with herbal and natural medications, because there are people, especially like in the farm working community, they can't afford medications, so they'll use an herb or something that their grandmother used, etc.
Exactly. Being in El Paso, people have, you know, cultural beliefs, and it's important that we do respect those. There are some herbs that may not necessarily be harmful to the patient. At the same time, we have to be able to make sure that there aren't interactions with other drugs, you know. Actually, on our library website, there's something called National Standard, a website called that we can go to that we actually register for. And this is this helps us to determine which natural herbs and remedies are the safest. So we can really sit down with the patients, just like even with all of their prescribed medications, we should still always go over those medications with them every single time. Patients are getting drugs from specialists, their primary care, friends, family, and we need to make sure that there aren't any interactions and that they're not actually causing harm.
October, as we all know, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we've seen an explosion of cancer patients all over the country, all over the world, and here, especially diabetes. So do you see more people coming forward, women, as far as for breast cancer or mammogram or anything like that?
Well, in the Department of Family Medicine, Dr. Navkiran Shokhar, she actually has a grant that is allowing women who don't have insurance to get free mammogram screening. I was at the medical student-run clinic, October 1st. They were giving free pap smears. They also give free mammograms. And so there are people within our university who are out there pushing it. Dr. Maureen Francis, she's helped the students at the medical student-run clinic secure a grant to give free mammograms as well. And so we're out there. Students are out there. You know, promotoras are out there, you know, in the communities where screening may be low, to bring people in to get screened for breast cancer, and including cervical cancer and also colon cancer with Axone. Again, Dr. Navkiran Shokhar, she has a huge grant for that as well.
Thank you very much. And Tracy, as we're winding up the interview, if you wouldn't mind giving us a web address or a page or a phone number that people can call to find out more information about as far as the grant or the program. Should they just go to the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center website?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of information on the Texas Tech website. Right now, we're in the process of really creating the Migrant Farmworker Center as a standalone nonprofit institution. So we're in the process of getting all of the right documents, and then we will definitely have that information up on a private website as well.
Well, I want to thank you all three very much for taking the time to be with us. And Justin, thank you. We took away a little bit from your studying time.
Not at all.
But it was great talking with you. We've been visiting with Dr. Charmaine Martin, the Director of Medical Student Education at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center of El Paso, Justin Hartman, a second-year medical student, and Tracy Leonard, who is the coordinator of the Primary Care Innovation Grant that Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center of El Paso received. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.